I think what we'll do is it is being recorded. I think we'll start because yes, I see there are a lot of people on. Somehow it worked. I don't know. Yeah. So, welcome, Rabbi Taubes. I really want to thank you. You know, Rabbi Taubes is a personal friend of mine, but he's a real. He's basically Gabbai Emeritus of Renai, and it's many, many years. Everyone knows, but I'll say it anyway. He's Rabbi of Congregation Zichron Mordechai. He is Rosh Yeshiva at YU and is also Rosh Masifto, or the head Rav for the high schools, both boys and girls, not together. And I really thank him because he's a busy schedule, and each time that I ask him, he happily agrees. The source sheets were given out in the shul's link, I hope everybody has them. I don't know. I doubt you're sharing them. Hope people should have printed them, whatever. But without further ado, and thank you again, Rabbi Michael Taubes.
Thank you very much. I apologize for the delay in the start. I had trouble logging in for some reason, but all's well that ends well. This Shabbos, as I show, we're going to read Parshas Bahalosa, which is a very interesting sedra. It has a lot of different narratives, which at first glance seem to be disparate, not really connected one to the other, little mini stories. Soloveitchik once gave a shiur where he explained actually how all the things are connected, which is not what I'm going to speak about. I think people need to mute if you're not muted. Okay. Anyway, that's not what I'm going to speak about this evening, but rather I'd like to focus on one episode, really a central episode in the Sedra. You know, if you look at the Sedra overall, so two-thirds of it is very upbeat. It's very upbeat because the Bnei Yisrael are poised to be entering Eretz Yisrael. Remember, this is before the story of the Meraglim and spies, which is in next week's Sedra. And they're about to go into Eretz Yisrael. It's now a little bit more than a year after Yetzias Mitzrayim. They received the Aseret Dibros, and they built the Mishkan and so on. And now it's a little more than a year. In fact, we read about Pesach Sheni in this Sedra. So it's a little more than a year after Yetzias Mitzrayim. And they're poised to enter into Eretz Yisrael. In fact, Moshe Rabbeinu invites Yisrael, his father-in-law, to join him. And he says the two words, Nosim Anachnu, we're about to enter into Eretz Yisrael. And then all of a sudden, the last third of the Sedra or so, everything turns sour and heads south very, very quickly. And that's the episode I'd like to look at in the first of the sources, if you have them, Perek Yud Aleph, here in Parshas Bahalosa, but Midbar Perek Yud Aleph, starting in Pasuk Aleph. Vayi Amkimis Onanim Rabez Na Hashem. People began to grumble and mumble and complain to Hashem. Vayishma Hashem, Vayicha Apo. Again, if I could ask people not muted to mute because there's some background noise. I don't want to be here. So it says, Vayishma Hashem Vayichar Apo. Kadosh Baruch Hu heard and he saw what was going on. He got angry and there was a fire which consumed certain people. Moshe Davin in Pasuk Beis that the fire should stop. So it did. And they called that place Tav'era. But then in Pasuk Dalid, in Source 1 still, B'midrash Perek Yud Aleph Pasuk Dalid, V'asaf Sufashem B'kibro His Avu Tavo. But there were still a lot of people. We won't go into who the Safsuf was now exactly, but his Avu Tavo, they had a great taiva, great desire, great appetite. We'll have to see for what. By Yeshuvu, by Yivku, Gamanei Yisrael, and they got other people to join them and to cry to HaKadosh Baruch Hu and said, Vayomu miyachilenu basar. Who's going to give us meat? Who's going to give us meat? And in Pasuk Hey, Zochana, we remember all these other types of foods and delicacies which we ate while yet in Mitzrayim. And now all we have is, it says in Pasuk Vav, Atah Nafshenu Yevesha Ein Kol Bilti El Hamon Einenu. All we have is this lousy mon. We're sick of it already. And we want to eat some of these other foods and vegetables and fruits and so on. As I'll say, these were certain things which the mon couldn't taste like. Okay. But whatever it is, basically the complaint of Bnei Yisrael at this time, when they're poised to enter into Eretz Yisrael, is we're not satisfied with the options on the menu. And that's what they complain about. And this event later leads to people dying. The place is called Kibros HaTava, and that really leads to the end of the Sedra, and the downfall continues, of course, in next week's Sedra with the story of the Meraglim. What exactly what this fight was about, or this complaining was about, we'll have to see. I'd like to share with you the thoughts developed by Rav Soloveitchik in a shiur that he gave in June of 1974, a long time ago, to an RCA convention. An RCA meeting. And it's printed in the book called Reflections of the Rav, Volume 1, edited by Rabbi Abraham Bezin. So you can look it up there. Most of what I present is from there. Maybe a few extra marmakomas here and there that I added in, but I'd like to share what the Rav thought. The Rav pointed out, obviously, only the Rav to point this out, that this was not the first time that the B'nai Yisrael complained or grumbled about that they were dissatisfied with certain things. I mean, the most dramatic and most well-known of such complaints was, of course, back in Parshas Kisisa, in source number 2, the events of the Egel, the Chayta Egel, right? I'm not going to read all the psukim, but we know what happened, right, in Parshas Kisisa, Shmos Parakon Abbas, Pasukala Bayaram, Kivoshe, Shmos Shalavetis Menahar. Moshe was delayed, or they thought he was delayed. He was coming down from the mountain late, or later than they expected him to come down. And they said to Aaron, Kuma Selan Elohim, we want some visible form of God that's going to lead us. And Aaron said, okay, let's get some gold together. And eventually, Aaron said, we'll build a Mizbeach. And then Pasuk Dalet, before that, it says, they made the eagle, right? An idol, the golden calf. And Aaron said, tomorrow is going to be a holiday. And they got up the next day and they brought offerings to it. And the Kodesh Baruch Hu told to Moshe, spoke to Moshe, who was still up on the mountain. Moshe wasn't back down yet. Looking Pasuk, Pasuk Zion there in Shmos Periklam and Beis. Right, Dabar Hashem Moshe, Lechri, Kishiches Amcha Sheheli Samaritz Mitzrayim. Sheheli Samaritz Mitzrayim. Go down because there's a tragedy waiting you below. The people we took out of Mitzrayim have sinned greatly. And in Pasuk Ches, Soru Mahem and Aderech Hashir Tzivisim. They have quickly abandoned what I have taught them, Asulahem Egel Masechah, they made an Egel, and they're bowing to it and worshiping to it. This is the God that took you out of Mitzrayim. And Hashem said to Moshe, there's a stubborn, stiff-necked people. And the last Pasuk Quinton source too, apparently on the base, Pasuk Yud, Atah Hanichali, the Yichar Pivahem Bachalim, leave me alone. I'm going to pour out my wrath against them, and I'll get rid of them, I'll obliterate them, and I'll start a nation out of you. Okay, now, this was the Chayta Egel, of course, one of the great sins of all time. What was Moshe's response at that time? So first of all, Rashi points out there in Parshas Kisisa, in third source, Parakon Beis was good, Hanichal Hashem said to Moshe, leave me alone. We don't find that Moshe said anything. What do you mean, leave me? Stop bothering me. He didn't bother him. Right? Didn't say anything yet. That's what Rashi points out. Adain lo shamanu, shispalo Moshe aleim. We didn't see that Moshe said anything, but who Amar Hanichali? Why does Hashem tell him, don't bother me, don't beseech me, don't approach? He didn't do anything yet. Ella kan posach lo pesach lahodio. He was telling Moshe, and he's giving him a hint. Leave me alone. Don't try anything like davening, because it's not going to help. Right? That was a hint, says Rashi. Right? It was a pesach. Shehadover toli boi, shemispalem lo yichalem. HaKadosh Baruch Hu was giving Moshe an opening. He said, don't even try davening, because I'm so angry, it's not going to make any difference at all. Don't even try. That was a hint that he should try. And Moshe understood that. And that was his reaction. Continuing in Perek Lamed Beis of Parshas Kisisa and Shmos, starting in source number 4, Moshe davened by Chal Moshe, right? That's the laning that we lay on a fast day in a tiny seaboard. By Chal Moshe, don't be angry with them. It's going to be bad. You have to remember Zechor Avram Litzchak Yisrael Avodecha, right? Remember the Avos and so on. Basically, Moshe beseeched HaKadosh Baruch Hu, don't punish them, don't be angry. In other words, Moshe rose to the occasion and pleaded the case of the people to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, and indeed, in Pasuk Yudala, the last line of source 4, Vayinochem Hashem al Aro, Asher Diber Lasos Lama, HaKadosh Baruch Hu calmed down, as it were, and he didn't punish Moshe, didn't punish the Jewish people per Moshe's request. In other words, on this occasion, the occasion of the making of the Egel, which of course was a blatant rejection of one of the Aseret HaDibros, not to have foreign, other types of gods and so on and so forth. Kadosh Baruch Hu was angry enough to want to destroy the Jewish people, hinted to Moshe maybe his tefillahs would help. Moshe rose to the occasion, he davened, and Kadosh Baruch Hu, quote unquote, calmed down. It wasn't just that Moshe davened. If you look in the Gemara in Brochas, Daf Lamed Beis and Aleph, source 5, Ta'a Nichali, and so on and so forth, Amar Abavo, if this wouldn't be a pasuk, wouldn't be able to say it. Melamed shetofso Moshe Hakadosh Baruch Hu kaadam shutofes chaver bevigdo. Hakadosh Moshe, so to speak, grabbed Hakadosh Baruch Hu like you grab somebody having discussions and a person turns away. You grab his coat, you grab him by the collar or by the jacket. You say, "Don't go away." So says the Gemara. In effect, says the Bavo. Even you can't say that about Hakadosh Baruch Hu, but as it were, that's what Moshe Rabbeinu did. And he says, "Ein ani manichacha ad shetimcho v'sislachlem. I'm not letting you go until you forgive them." Notice Moshe was emphatic about it. That's the Gemara saying. We can't speak about Kodesh Baruch Hu, they grabbed him, so to speak. But in a matter of the way Moshe presented, the way Moshe beseeched Kodesh Baruch Hu on behalf of B'nai Yisrael, he said, "I'm not letting you go until you forgive the people." Hanichali, that's what Rashi says in 6, Rashi and Brachas Lamed Beis and Aleph. Hanichali Mash Rasha Oches Bo, holding on to him, as it were. That's how Moshe responded by the Chet HaEgel. Moshe understood that he needs to daven for the Jewish people, to plead with HaKadosh Baruch Hu to forgive them. Don't be angry at them. Understand, remember the Zuchus Avos and everything that Moshe put in his tefillas. And indeed it worked. What was the reaction here in our Parshan, Parshas Bahalosa, when the people complained about the food that they didn't like what was on the menu? Let's look in Source 7, continuing in Parshas Bahalosa, Bemidbar, Perek Yud Aleph, Pasuk Yud. By Yishma Moshe Sam Bochel Mishpechoso. Moshe heard the people whining and kvetching family by family. Ish lefesach halo. Vayichar Hashem, Hashem got angry. Uveinei Moshe ra. Moshe was also thought, this is terrible. He's very upset. And now look at Pasuk Yud Aleph. Wow. Vayomer Moshe Hashem. Lama hareosa la'avdecho. V'lama lo matzasi chein beinecha l'sumes masa kolama ze'alai. Moshe says to Kodesh Baruch Hu, in effect, what did I ever do wrong to you? Why do you not like me? Why have I not found favor in your eyes that you have placed upon me the burden of this people? That's a Moshe HaKadosh Baruch. It's a simple reading of the Pasuk. Pasuk Yud Aleph. What did I ever do to you? Right? Why have you treated me so poorly and dumped on me the burden of this people? Lasumas Masa Kalama Zelai. You're dumping this on me. And look at Pasuk Yud Beis, top of the next page. Ha'anochi Harisis Kalama Zelai. Did I give birth to these people? Ivanochi Litio, you know, I birthed them. I'm their father. I'm their mother. Kisoma Eli Sael Bechekechu. You tell them I got to carry them, you know, in my chest, so to speak, like a parent carries a baby. Kasha Yisa Omen is Ionic, like a nursing mother carries her suckling babe. Okay, that's what I got to do. In other words, Moshe said, these are a bunch of crybabies. They're a bunch of crybabies. I didn't sign up for this. I'm not interested in this. May I only bust? So where am I supposed to get meat? They're crying. They want meat. Where am I supposed to get food for them? I can't look at your da lochal anochi levadilo says as kolamazah. I can't bear managing these people myself. Ki chaved mimen. It's too much for me. And pasuk tazlov imkocha ato sali hargeni no harog. If this is what you want from me, take me out of this world. Get me out of here. Okay. Imotzaschem menechav al ereb rossi. Let me not continue to suffer like this. Wow. What a difference. Right here, by the complaint about the food and so on, Moshe Rabbeinu throws up his hands and says, I don't want any part of this. I didn't sign up for this. If this is what you want me to do, forget it. Get me out of here. I don't want to deal with these people. It's too much for me. So Rav pointed out, what a contrast. Right? What a contrast. By the Chet HaEgel, Moshe gets up, by Chal Moshe, he grabs HaKadosh Baruch Hu, so to speak, and says, I'm not letting you go till you forgive them. And he forgives them. Over here, Moshe Rabbeinu throws up his hands. I can't go. This is not for me. I don't want this job. And I can't tolerate a bunch of babies. I'm not their mother. I'm not their nursemaid. I'm not in charge of holding them like suckling babes and so on. That's not for me. So what accounts for this distinction? What was different? Why did Moshe Rabbeinu react so differently over here? They basically gave up and he said, I can't do this job anymore. So the truth of the matter is, it's not the first time that Moshe was disappointed, so to speak, and asked to be released from his position. Back in Parsha Shmos, the source number 8, Shmos Perek Hei, Pasuk Chof Beis, right? This was at the end of Parsha Shmos, where after Moshe first came to Paro and asked that he release the Jews from Mitzrayim, Paro's response was, not only didn't he release them, he made the work harder. Remember, he said, now you're not going to get any straw anymore. You got to gather your own straw. Right, he made it harder. So Moshe Rabbeinu came to HaKadosh Baruch Hu in the source 8, Shmos Perek Hei, Pasuk Chof Beis. Moshe Hashem, Hashem, Lama Harios, Lama Zeh Shlachtoni. What did you send me here for? Ever since I came on the scene to speak to Paro in your name, Hera Lama Zeh, made matters worse. You didn't save the people, right? Okay, but they could say Moshe Rabbeinu was inexperienced. He had just gotten into this job and so on and so forth. And he was disappointed that it wasn't an immediate result when he came to Mitzrayim. He had to learn. So even though over there also Moshe made a complaint, that was a young Moshe, younger Moshe, okay, an inexperienced Moshe, just taking over the reins of leadership and so on, and didn't necessarily know how things work. But by now, after all the Makkos, and after Kriyas Yamsuf, and after Matan Torah and Mamet Har Sinai, and a year in the Midbar, now Moshe Rabbeinu is a different person. And so how come over here Moshe Rabbeinu reacted like he did back then? And he said, I don't want this job. I can't deal with these people. These are a bunch of babies. What is the difference between the Egel HaZohar Rav Soloveitchik asked and the story of Kibros HaTava? The Rav explained, if you look carefully at the story of the Chet HaEgel. You look carefully at the eagle. What was going on? What happened? So the Rashi in Parshas Ki Sisa, source number 9, Shmos Paraklamet Beis Pasuk Alef, Kivo Sheish Moshe, they saw that Moshe was delayed. And Rashi fills in the blanks. He said, I'll say it outside to save a few moments. You can look at the Rashi. Rashi says, and it's really a Gemara. It's a Gemara in Shabbos, Daf Pei Testament Aleph in source 10. Rashi's basically summarizing the Gemara. And, you have the same Rashi's more or less there in the Gemara in Shabbos. Basically, what happened was the people had calculated and been told by Moshe, I'm going to be going up to the mountain for 40 days and 40 nights. And they understood when the count would start, they didn't realize that the day he went up didn't count as the first day. It was only, would be starting to count after he gets up. So their count was off and so on. And they miscalculated. And Rashi gives you the math. He went up on the 7th of Sivan. We just had Shavuos last week, right? So he went on the 7th of Sivan. Nimtza Yom Arboim B'Shivosa B'Tamus. So you do the math. For the rest of Sivan and 17 days of Tammuz, Shavuot B'Tammuz was the day that they were expecting him. So B'Shishosar, to watch the end of Rashi 9, B'Shishosar, the 16th of Sivan, Bo Hasar Tzotan V'Irves Olam. The Tzotan came and mixed everybody up. The Hera Demus Choshech, Vafil Revuvia. He saw it, painted a picture. It was a dark day. It was a depressing day, as if to suggest Moshe ain't coming back. Something happened to him on top of the mountain. He's not coming back. And therefore, confused people, Amalem Meis Moshe, because they see Boshesh, the sixth hour of the day is coming. He hasn't come back yet. Must be he's not coming back. And they were all confused. That's Rashi used the word Irvuvia. Okay. And the Gemara in Shabbos on Pei Tesman Aleph in source 10 says there was even a vision somehow of a coffin being carried in the heavens and so on, as if to suggest this was Moshe's coffin, that he had died up there and so on. Anyway, that's what caused the confusion. And that really was what threw B'nai Yisrael off. Okay? Obviously, the people, understandably, were terrified about being abandoned without a leader. Moshe was the only leader they had known for the last few years, right? Ever since he came to Mitzrayim and started with the Makos, everything that happened at the direction of or under the supervision of Moshe Rabbeinu. Right? I mean, starting with the Makos and leaving Mitzrayim that day, and then the seventh day was after that was Kriyas Yamsuf, and again, Matan Torah, everything, and everything happened under the direction, under the supervision of Moshe. And now suddenly Moshe is gone, and here are all the people stuck in this desert. What do we do now with the slave mentality, without a leader? So for them, basically, the Egel was a substitute for Moshe. They were misled, perhaps, was the Erev Rav, the so-called mixed multitude of others, or was this the Satan? However we understand it. And we need to understand that wasn't that they worshiped the Egel Azov as a god, but rather as a representative of God. Just as Moshe was the representative, now this Egel was the representative. That was the Chet Egel. Not a good thing. Not something that was allowed. But that was something that made a certain amount of sense. If you look, I'm not going to read it, but you look, and it's very worthwhile reading. The Rambam in the beginning of Hilchas Avodah Zarah, Hilchas Avodah Kochav, sometimes called Perek Aleph, Halacha Aleph. Okay, the Rambam gives you a brief overview of the history of idolatry. How did it develop? Okay, how did it develop? I mean, how did people suddenly start? Well, we learn, Avraham Avinu's father had all these idols in his shop, and later he busted them up, But where did it come from to worship things? So the Rambam gives you historically, Bimei Enosh, right? It was the grandson of Adam. Tov b'nei Adam tov, so made a mistake. And they started to think, Kadosh Baruch Hu created the stars and the heavenly spheres and so on to be in the world. And, we look at them and they're awe-inspiring and so on. So they started to give covered, people started to honor these heavenly spheres and so on, these majestic mountains perhaps and other things. Not that they thought that these were God, but these were representatives of God's greatness and so on. After all, a king has also noblemen that he appoints to positions of authority, and you have to show respect to them too. When you respect the king, you respect all the king's men also. All the king's horses and all the king's men, right? Respect them too. And that's what started to happen, okay? Until eventually, they started serving or worshiping these things as representatives of HaKadosh Baruch Hu and so on. Until it came, they forgot about HaKadosh Baruch Hu and they just observed these things. That's what it says in Halacha Beis. After many years, there were false prophets and false people saying, you don't just serve this star as a representative of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. The star itself has godly powers and so on and so forth. And that's how, says the Rambam, a brief history of Avodas Kochavim. That's really how it spread. Okay? In any event, what happened at the time of the Chet HaEgel. Okay, what basically happened is that there was Avodah Zarah, right? There was idolatry, which there was actual worship in idolatry, as Rav pointed out. There's ritual, there are performances of certain things, right? It's a service, it's a type of service, okay, to various alleged deities, which somehow the people respect, okay? But the Rav distinguished between idolatry and paganism. And paganism. Idols, okay? Idol worship by itself is a bad thing, okay? But even worse is that it leads to paganism. What is paganism exactly? How does paganism, what role does paganism play? There, the Rav said, is that the pagan deity, so to speak, makes demands of a person culturally and beyond, you know, any moral norms. Basically, if a man serves nature, so to speak, I'm going to read you the Rav's own words from this work, okay? For man lustily to partake of nature is an act of identifying such gods. Man actually sees himself as coextensive to nature and therefore craves unlimited indulgence. In other words, basically, a person ultimately, you know who he's serving? He's serving himself. Serving himself. So even if there is no more idolatry, but there's a certain sense of paganism, unbridled or uncontrolled lust or passion or immoral behavior in the name, perhaps, of good things, but in the name, basically, of man's own desires. Okay? In our system, of course, HaKadosh Baruch Hu urges self-control, urges a person not to give in to temptations and not to serve himself, so to speak, but to serve him. If you take a look in Source 13, it's a pasuk we all know from the Parsha of Tzitzis, Bamidbar, it's Parsha Shlach, next week's Sedja, Perek Tezvav, Pasuk Lamed Tes. Well, Lechem Letzitzis, right? What do you have? Tzitzis, Risam, Osos, Hartam, Slamitzos, Shem, Basim, Shom, Below Sosuru, Acharei Levavchem, Acharei Nechem, Asher, Tem, Zonim, Achareim. The Tzitzis remind us of mitzvahs which are designed that we should not be led astray by our eyes and by our heart, things we see, the things we desire. Rashi and Chumash there in 14 says, Halev einayim. Now the word lo sasuru is the word used at the beginning of the Sedra about the spies scouting out the land, lo sasura sa'aretz. So Rashi says, it's not a coincidence. Rashi says in 14, Rashi and Chumash in Parsha Shlach, Perek Tezvav, Pasuk Lamed Tes, Source 14, Halev einayim hei meraglim laguf. The heart and the eyes are like the spies for the body, and they tempt a body to do averas. Ha'ayin roe, the eye sees certain things. Ha'alev chomed, and the heart has a taiva, has a desire to fulfill this passion and so on. And then v'haguf oses averis, the body does the averis. So basically, Judaism, which tells you to control lo sasur acharei levav, is the antithesis of paganism. The idea of paganism to give in to your desires, right? And to justify it. And in a certain sense, the Torah rejects paganism even more than it rejects idolatry, okay? Because the truth of the matter is idolatry, in the final analysis, is illogical, okay? You know, to say that this statue has certain powers and so on and so forth, it's difficult to justify. It's short-lived. Okay, I don't know if anybody saw this, but I saw an article about a week or two ago. You know, the country of India has been terribly affected by COVID. Right, and in many deaths and so on and so forth, the Rahman al-Islam, a lot of people have suffered. Okay, and I still think people have, there they do have forms of idolatry, at least in certain religions there. And people took their idols and threw them out the window and cast them into the streets and threw them to the water. I don't think we saw this. Those are people, street sweepers, sweeping up broken idols and so on and so forth. You know, after a while, you realize it doesn't work. It may take a long while. You realize that they're powerless. Eventually, you can convince somebody. The truth of the matter is, the Greeks and the Romans didn't worship idols, but they were pagans. You think about Greek mythology for a moment. You know, we read about it for entertainment purposes, right? All the Greek gods, the so-called Greek gods, what are they? They're super human beings, right? This one, Mercury can run very fast. And Hercules has great strength. And Aphrodite, is a beauty or love. And all the Greek gods are human beings with human frailties, by the way. Can you read the stories in Greek mythology? Yeah, they connive against each other and they try to outwit each other and so on and so forth, right? Basically, they're human beings with superpowers. They're superhumans, okay? Basically, all the human desires and all the human taivas are exemplified in a super sense through these Greek gods, okay? And the Rav suggested the following, okay? Idol worship, you can convince people. You sit down with people and have intellectual, rational discussions, you can have a pretty good chance of convincing them of the failure of a system of idolatry. Pretty good chance. Not always, but very often. Vaharaya, idolatry is not in the world today the way it once was. Okay, the educated, Greece and Rome, where we're educated, and philosophers and so on and so forth, and they abandoned typical idolatry for the most part. And those who still have idols, but really it's more of a means of identifying with HaKadosh Baruch Hu or their version of HaKadosh Baruch Hu and so on. The idolatry you can get rid of, but paganism has a hold on people even after there's no more idol worship. Okay. And that is a much more threatening and a much more damaging kind of threat. Why? Because rationale and logic and education and philosophy, that you can't control passion with that. People have drives, people have passions, and you can know that something's wrong, but you have a great desire to do it. How many people do we know are told by doctors, don't eat this or don't do that, but I do it anyway. Now, I know it's not good for me, but we do it anyway. Right, I include myself. We do it anyway because we have drives, we have passions, even though logically I know that I should do X, Y, and Z, and I should not do A, B, and C. But, when you're dealing with passion and drive and emotions and so on and so forth, that's much harder to control. And so the episode described in Parshas Balosa suggested of Soloveitchik was very different than the episode of the Chet HaEgel. The Chet HaEgel was rooted in idolatry. It was a mistake. It's an avera. I'm not lessening it. I'm not justifying it. But ultimately, it was something that Moshe Rabbeinu felt, I can deal with this. I can educate these people. He told HaKadosh Baruch Hu, forgive them. We'll work it out, right? I'm not letting you go till you forgive them. When I get down, I'll do something. He broke the luchos. He explained you did a terrible thing, right? Moshe felt that through his power as an educator, as a mechanech, and as a manhig, I can talk to people, rational people. I can convince them of the error of their ways through my teaching and through my educating. But when dealing with the kinds of things that manifest themselves here in Parshas Balos and Kibbutz Hatava, Moshe felt, I can't do it. Educating and teaching, it's not going to work. Something more is needed, and I can't do it myself. Take a look now at what some of the commentaries have to say in Parshas Balos. Perek Yud Aleph earlier. Okay. It's a little later. Pasuk Lamed Aleph. Okay. You see, when HaKadosh Baruch Hu provided them with meat, he provided them with the quails, right? Slow. Beruach nosam esrim ayoga salvim in hayom vaita shalomach derech yom koch derech yom koch. I don't know how many hundreds of thousands of these quails, these birds, descended upon the community, upon the camp. It was all the whole distance of the camp. One day journey that way, one day journey that way, all these birds. And Lamed Beis, Vayakam Ha'am Kol Ha'am Ahu Cholayla V'chom Acharos. That day, the next day, the next night, they gathered slav. Right? This is unbridled, unchecked gluttony. Right? This is passion and taiva and desire taking over in an unbridled way. Right? It's unmitigated and unlimited desire. And they gathered all these animals, these birds rather. And it says, Ha'amami Tosav Ha'chomarim. He who gathered the least gathered 10 piles. This is an example of unbridled or unchecked, desire for gratification and for satisfying urges and so on. Basically, in the language of the Rav, we have here desire gone berserk, a craving without any restraint. And that's really what Moshe Rabbeinu saw this time. And it started earlier. If you take a look in source 17, okay, I'm sorry, source 16. Earlier, the previous parak Yud Pasuk Perikud Pasuk Lamin Gimel 16. Vayisu Hashem Der Shoshim Aaron Bris Hashem No Save Man Der Shoshim No Sulam Menucha. They traveled. This whole episode started when they left Har Sinai after more than a year, right? Okay, it's now more than a year after the Yitzchak Mitzrayim, they left Har Sinai. Vayisu Mehar Hashem. They traveled Mehar Hashem. Says the Gemara in Shabbos, Daf Kuf Tes Zayin Amud Aleph 17. Vayisu Mehar Hashem. They didn't just leave Har Sinai. Amar B'chama B'chanina Shasaru Me'acharei Hashem. They left Hashem too. Goodbye Har Sinai. Goodbye HaKadosh Baruch Hu. We've had enough. Okay, that's a Rashi in Shabbos says 18. B'sol Shloshem Masam. His Abu was Ha'asaf Suf Taiba. It's within 3 days of that this whole story, when they had this great Taiba for all the food, it was within 3 days of leaving Har Sinai. Because they didn't just leave the physical mountain of Har Sinai. They left, at least mentally, what Har Sinai represented. Okay? And that's what Tosas there in Shabbos quotes a Medrash, Tosas in Shabbos, Kuf Tezam Rav, Dimas Peronos 19. Tosas says, Peronos, we've shown this was the first of the problems in our Sedra. Shenosum Har Sinai del Shoshas Yomim, a famous expression, Ketinok Hayotze Mi Beis HaSefer. Like a kid getting out of school. Remember the last day of school? We're out of here. Right? Hooray, right? You're running out. You can't wait to get out. Okay, not even only the last day of school, right? Even a regular day of school. You're looking at that clock, right? The bell's going to ring at 4 o'clock, 4:36, whatever time. You're looking, you know, come on, right? You can't wait to get out. Can't wait to escape. And certainly the last day of school, okay? That's how eager they were, like a kid getting out of school. Among the teachers, we always had a line. How come the Tosa says, the Ramban mentioned also, but the Ramban and our Sedra mentioned it also. In source 20, the Ramban and Perikud Pasuk Lamed Hey, by Ibn Soron. Ramban says, look at the Ramban right to the end of the first line of 20. Shenosuma Har Sinai b'simcha. They were delighted to leave. Enough mitzvahs. Thank you. We're leaving here now. We're ready to get out of here. Ketina kabarechem beis ha-sefer. Okay. No, I'll, Omer Shemra, yirbu v'ten lana mitzvahs. Let's get out of here before there are more mitzvahs dumped on us. Let's get out of here, right? Therefore, they ran away. That was their machshava. So people in the teaching world, they ask, how come it says like students running out of school? It should say like teachers running out of school. The teachers are also eager to leave school on the last day of school. So how come it always says the students getting out of school, not teachers getting out of school? So the joke on teachers is they didn't go that fast, right? They didn't go that fast, not as fast as the teachers go. But anyway, be that as it may, the idea is that they wanted to leave Har Sinai, and that's the problem. That's where the problem started. They had this desire to get away from mitzvahs, to get away from Torah. And sure enough, look in Rashi, in source 11, source 21, Perikud Aleph, Pasuk Dalet, Miach Leinu Bosar. Very strange. They didn't have meat. They had plenty of meat. Go back for a minute to the first source, that complaint, right? At the end of Pasuk Dalet, in source 1, Perikud Aleph, Masaf Sashar Kibbutz, etc. Bayomu Miach Leinu Bosar. Who's going to give us meat? What do you mean, who's going to give us meat? They had plenty of meat. There were no shortage of animals in the desert. That's what Rashi asked in our Sedra 21. V'chilo ha'lahem basa, they had meat. V'lo kvar nemar. Look in Parshas Bo, when they came out of Mitzrayim. Look in 22, I printed the pasuk for you. Perikud Beis Shmos, pasuk Lamed Ches. V'gam erev rav ala itam, v'tzon u'bakar mikne kaved ma'od. They left with loads of animals when they left Mitzrayim. It's only a year later. They had tons of animals. Not only that, if you tell me, oh, they can, says Rashi at the end of the first line of 21, being Tomar Achlu, maybe they ate all those animals. No, because years later, when they come in, they're about to go into Eretz Yisrael, 40 years later, remember? Parshas Matos, source 23, Paraklamid Beis of Amidbar Pasuk Aleph, Umikne Rav, Ha'ilev Ne'ruvalev God, Otsum Me'od. Remember, the two tribes wanted to stay on the eastern side of the Jordan River, the B'nai God and the B'nai Ruvain, and half tribe Menashe joined them later, right? Why? Because they had lots of animals. These were good grazing lands and so on and so forth. So there's Rashi wonders, what are they complaining about? We have no meat. They had plenty of meat. There are plenty of meat available. What's the problem? So says Rashi at the end of 21, right? Says Rashi, Ela shemevakshim alila. They were looking to complain. They were looking for something to complain about. Okay, they didn't really, and you know, they weren't short of meat. They were looking for something to complain about. And what was this something to complain about? Some suggest miyachlinu basar. Basar doesn't mean meat in the sense of consuming meat, but the pleasures of the flesh. Bottom line, pleasures of the flesh. That's what they wanted. They're happy to leave Har Sinai. No more mitzvahs. And they wanted pleasures of the body, pleasures of the flesh. That's what the Gemara says in Yuma, Daf Ayin Hamad Aleph, source 24. When they talked about the fish, Zocharno es Hadoga, right? Back in source 1 in Pasuk, Hey, Zocharno es Hadoga, Shalom Chal Mitzrayim, the fish we ate in good old Egypt land. Okay, it says now there was Rav Shmuel Charamar Dogim with fish. Charamar Arayos. Arayos prohibited sexual conduct. How do you get that from fish? Rashi explains because the pasuk says when it talks about procreation, pasuk we know in Parshas Vayechi, Bereishis Perak Mem Ches pasuk Tazayin, source 26, Hamalach Hagolasi etc. The Yidgul Arov Bekarav Haaretz. Where the Yidgul, right? Fish. They should procreate like fish. Okay, so that's what they were talking about according to one of the opinions of Rav and Shmuel. Okay, and at the end it says also. Vayishma Moshe Sa'am Bochel Lemishpichosav. That's in, I find that pasuk. That's later. That's not in the first collection of Tukim, but rather in source number 7, Perkial of Pasuk Yud. Vayishma Moshe Sa'am Bochel Lemishpichosav. They were crying family by family. What does that mean? So the Gemara has Al Iske Mishpichosav Shanesu Lahem Lishkov Etzlam. It had to do with the laws of family and prohibited sexual relationships and family relationships, incest and so on. That's what they complain about. And at the end, the Gemara said they all agree. Some say they complain about the food and about this. But Arayas, that was the issue. Okay, look in Rashi, in our Sedra, in Baal Oscha, Perikid Aleph, Pasuk Yud, 27. Bochel Mishpechosav, Mishpechos, Nesofim, Bochel, Parastam, Tomosav, Megoli. That's the simple shot. They got together as a family to complain, each family. Ravoseno Omru, Mishpechosav, Al Iske, Mishpechos, Al Arayos, Hanesos, Lehem. That's what they were complaining about. The laws, the prohibition, the mitzvahs, restraining pleasures of the flesh, pleasures of the body. And that's what the episode of Kibbutz Hatava was about. Self-indulgence. Okay. And that's why they complain about the mon. Okay. What is the mon? The mon is about restraint. You look in Parshas B'Shalach, the Rav pointed out, source 28, Shmos Perak Tezayin, Pusik Tezayin. Zeh Adover, Asher Tziva Hashem, when the mon first began to fall, right? Here, each person should collect Omer, an Omer's worth. An Omer's a measurement. A measurement of how much per head. Omer Lagulgolas, and that's what they did. And everybody, no one took more, nobody took less, and so on. Okay? And I realize I printed those took them twice, so we don't need it twice, once enough. Okay? And what's the idea? It was a measured amount. You'll suffice. A little bit of mon is enough. What are they complaining about here? We don't like the mon. We want to eat more. We want to enjoy more. We want more pleasures, more. We don't want any restraint. Okay? With mon, they had to limit themselves. It's controlled, disciplined indulgence. But here, it's the exact opposite. It's giving in to your cravings. And that's what the Torah speaks about. And so, Rav Soloveitchik suggested, Moshe Rabbeinu here grew frustrated because he realized that here, his position will necessarily have to change. Moshe viewed himself, perhaps, as an educator. What's his job? From the very beginning, if we look in Parsha Shmos, source number 30, in Parsha Shmos, when Hashem first appears to Moshe at the burning bush, Moshe Elohim, Mi Anochi Gelechel Paro. Moshe, as we know, does not want to take on this mission. He says, who am I to go to speak to Paro to release the Bnei Yisrael from Mitzrayim? Who am I? Right? And when Hashem says to him, among other things, is, in the end of Pasuk Yud Beis, of Parak Gimel and Shmos, last part of 30, Behotziacha Es'om Mitzrayim, Tav Dunes Elohim, when you bring the people out, bring them to serve God on this here mountain, Har Sinai. That's where it was. In other words, what's your job? To condition them, to ready them to serve me. And that's a mission Moshe ultimately accepts. To make the Bnei Yisrael, as it says in 31, Atam Tiulim Amlechas Kanim Begoy Kadosh, right? The Bnei Yisrael are Amlechas Kanim, a holy nation, a chosen nation, and so on. Okay? Moshe Rabbeinu views himself as a spiritual and moral role model, a pedagogue, a teacher, an educator. Okay? And that, HaKadosh Baruch Hu says, why I'm assigning you this mission. Okay? Therefore, by the Chet HaEgel, said Rav Soloveitchik, Moshe Rabbeinu reacted as a teacher, as an educator. Okay? He smashed the luchos as the monster. Sometimes you need audio-visual aids, right? In a classroom, very popular today. Computers, all kinds of other things, smart boards, and all these different things, right? It makes a dramatic, you know, to show people. So Moshe did something demonstrative. He smashed the luchos, okay? And he felt that's going to get rid of idolatry, okay? Because idolatry, what you need to get rid of idolatry is effective teaching, effective pedagogy. And that Moshe felt he was qualified to do. But here in Kibbutz Hatava, said the Rav, the Chet, the Avera, was not idol worship, but paganism. Pritzos, unlimited giving into craving, sexual wantonness, desire unbound, okay, indulging the senses and so on, pleasures of the flesh, the orgiastic, the Rav said, and so on. In other words, that's what the Greeks called hedonism. That, all the teaching and all the educating is not going to, you can argue and you can persuade effectively against idolatry, but not so much against paganism, because it doesn't accept morality. It's basically, it's not a different discipline, a different way of looking at things, a totally different realm. And here, Moshe Rabbeinu felt unqualified. What did HaKadosh Baruch Hu want of Moshe here? Let's look back now at the opening psukim and we'll wrap up. Okay. What HaKadosh Baruch Hu wanted of Moshe, or what Moshe thought he wanted, right? He said, what can I do? Right. Hanoche Harisa, let's find in source number 7, psukim Yud Beis. Hanoche Harisa is kol hamazeh. Did I give birth to these people? I should nurse them and carry them and coddle them and so on and so forth. You know what the answer to that question is? Yes. Yes. You want to be an effective educator? You want to be an effective leader? Not only the powers of your intellect and so on to persuade against idolatry, but the warmth, the closeness, the personality to persuade against paganism. Logic, it's not going to work. Okay, arguments and education, that's not going to work. What we need is something else. Okay, we need, Moshe Rabbeinu basically says here, it's told here by HaKadosh Baruch Hu, right? He asked the question, but it's a rhetorical question. The answer is yes. You have to carry them like a nursing mother or a nursing father carries his baby child. Moshe didn't want that role, but that's what HaKadosh Baruch Hu said. It's part of your role. To be a leader, in a certain sense, to be an effective educator, you've got to sometimes step into something which is not comfortable for you. And you've got to connect to the emotional. You've got to connect to the, to the heart, not just to the mind. Okay. The Rav referred to this talk as teaching with clarity and empathy. You can teach with clarity. You have to teach with clarity, but you also have to teach with empathy. Okay. Look in the Malbim. The Rav didn't quote this, but the Malbim in Source 32, the Malbim here in our Sedra, in Balosa, Perki Aleph, Pasuk Yud Beis, Hanochi Arisi. Okay. He says, Moshe realized, he was asking, but he realized, okay, I understand I'm a teacher. Okay. Well, Lamed in the second line, Das, Vesechel, Vachachma, teach knowledge, intelligence, wisdom. Hanochi Arisi, I also have to provide them with their food. I have to give them breakfast. Yes. Yes. Okay, Moshe asked that, but the answer is yes, you do have to. And it's interesting, okay? You look in the Gemara in Sanhedrin, Daf Chesam Aleph, 33. A Dayan, who was also a community leader, a judge, making laws and so on and so forth. Azhar la Dayan she yispol es hatzibur. A judge has to be able to tolerate, so to speak, the tzibur, the community. Ad kama, how much they have to tolerate? Amar of Chana v'tamer of Shabbosai. Kasha yisa omen es hayonek, our posuk. Yeah, you got to nurse them. You got to be with people. You got to connect them in a different way also. That's how you can win them over, not only through the power of persuasion and logical argument, which is necessary, pedagogy and teaching, but there's also the emotional. There's also almost like sublimating yourself to the needs of your students and so on. Being patient, sympathetic, understanding, empathetic, okay, like a nursing mother or a nursing father would be. And the Rambam brings this in Hilchos Sanhedrin, Parakof Ha'elach HaBeis, the last source, 34. Treat the people properly and so on. And look what the Rambam said at the end of line 1. Alpha Pahim Shem Hein Hedyotos. Some of these people are fools. Ushfelim are not that intelligent or lower kinds of people. But B'nai Avram Yitzhak Yaakov Hein. They're still Jews. They're still B'nai Avram Yitzhak Yaakov. Okay. And Hashem took them out of Mitzrayim. And you have to tolerate them like Moshe Rabbeinu. Shenem Arbo Kasha Yisrael Menesayonek. Okay. And that's exactly, says the Rambam, what's necessary for a successful educator is not just somebody who can teach knowledge and so on, but somebody who can connect the person on the emotional level. And just to conclude, I'll read the Rav's words because you can't say it better than he did. Our age is demonstrably pagan without idol worship as such. In most places, we're not dealing with idol worship. But we're dealing with paganism. It consists, and this is written, I remind you, 1974, so you can multiply it numerous times over if you want to consider the situation now in 2021. Okay, the Rav's words. It consists of inhibited priestess. The teaching role may have been sufficient at one time in the past to counter the allurement of other religions, philosophies, and ideologies which still abound. We can teach and demonstrate the greater credibility of our own way of life. But the paganism of our day requires that element of the omen, the nursing father, the nursing mother, that has to be combined with the teaching. particularly since the emotional introspective element is so pronounced in contemporary human relationship. Okay, what we require is the warm embrace as much as the brilliant idea, sympathetic understanding, true befriending, and a human reaching out. A suggestion to our modern misononym, the restless complainers, that we care. That's the role of the effective teacher. That has to be pursued, of course, with dignity and self-respect. But that, suggested the Rav Soloveitchik, is the role of the effective leader who can connect both to the mind, connect to the heart as well, can teach both with clarity and with empathy. Wish everybody a good Shabbos, and thank you very much for listening.
Shukayak, anybody have any questions? You can unmute.
Unmute.
No questions. Either everybody sleeping or they're
not sleeping. All right. Shukayak, Michael, Rabbi, this is, thank you very much.
My pleasure. Thank you, Rabbi. Thanks, Rabbi.
An essay well worth reading, by the way.
Shukayak, have a good Shabbos.
A good and Shabbos, Lul.
Thank you.
Howie?
Yes.
A question. Last week, we couldn't get in.